Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to the first podcast of August here for Gopher Gridiron Radio. 3 days until fall camp opens as we are recording this Tuesday night, Luke. It's been far too long since Gopher fans have had some Gopher football in their life. So I can tell you from the numbers on our early podcast here, there's a lot of excited Gopher football fans, wouldn't you agree?
Oh yeah, definitely. That, you know, it's kind of that it's that time of year where the sports abyss is in full swing. I know there is an Olympics, but you know, it's eventually we're kind of starting to pull out of it. With the Vikings have started training camp, people are getting excited about fall sports again. The Twins are miserable. It's just a good time to be getting back into the swing of things, and it's especially fun to get football back on the docket. And obviously people listening to this are really excited about Gopher football starting.
Yeah, I mean, you're starting to see NFL training camps open up, especially with the Vikings starting to get going. You see a lot more of the football fans emerging from the woodwork to try and figure out, you know, what's this Gopher football team going to start to look like? And I think between you and I, the last few podcasts and the one we're going to record here tonight, I think fans should have a pretty good idea of what's going on heading into fall camp opening on Friday and the first fall practice for the public to be open on Saturday. So it should be a good season. So we'll have to decipher things each week as we learn a little bit more about this Gopher team.
All right, let's start with that practice schedule, actually, and what's open to the public. Just for those that, you know, may not be familiar with a giant social media site called Twitter, they released their fall schedule and what was available to the public. So those dates, if you're curious, get your pencil out. They're August 6th at 10 a.m., August 9th at 10 a.m., August 12th at 10 a.m., and then August 13th at 9:10 a.m. and 4:45 p.m. So I got to imagine, and I should specify too, that 4:45 p.m. will be at TCF Bank Stadium. All other practices will be at the Bronco Nagurski Center. Ryan, I got to imagine that 13th at 4:45 is going to be a scrimmage of some sort. And, you know, especially these first couple practices, like the one on the 6th and maybe even the one on the 9th, I'd imagine the one on the 6th is just going to be shorts and hats, right?
Yeah, for those who are looking to see, you know, some actual hitting and some actual productive things, as Luke said, the first open practice will be on the 6th. It'll be their second practice, so I can guarantee that there won't be a lot of hitting. It'll be them and just pro pads, likely, so just helmets and shoulder pads. But the one on the 9th and the one on the 12th should be pretty good ones, and then if you are going to come on that Saturday the 13th, I would recommend coming for the scrimmage in the afternoon, as I'd imagine that the practice in the morning is only going to be pro pads as they're trying to get ready for their fall scrimmage in the afternoon. I mean, that same fall scrimmage last year is where Shannon Brooks, I mean, really emerged as someone that was one of the big winners from that scrimmage. I remember Rashad Still did some things. So I think that's a good early indication of what freshmen are going to be the ones that have major roles and just what guys on this team are really stepping up through the first week and a half of camp. But as Luke said, August 6th, August 9th, 12th, and then 2 and the 13th, those are your only five open practices for fall camp before the Gophers take on Oregon State. So I'll be at each and every practice, and I believe the media have a few more practices we can attend. But for those who are, you know, envying my position, just know that it's the first 20 minutes for those days that are open. So basically, I get to come in and watch 10 minutes of stretching and 10 minutes of individual work. So it's not like you guys are missing too much, but five open practices to the public. So if you want to come down and take a look at what this Minnesota Golden Gopher football team is looking like, I highly encourage you guys to come down. And if you see a 6'4", 20-year-old, you know, mid-20s guy, you know, come on over, talk some Gopher football with me, and we'll have a good time.
All right, Ryan, let's just talk some storylines going into this season. Obviously, the big one, I think, has to be the new additions on the offensive staff with Jay Johnson joining and Bart Miller joining. You know, there's going to be some changes to the offense. You've well documented that, you know, somewhere around 60 to 70% of the offense will stay the same, but, you know, there will be a little bit of change. So I got to imagine that's one of the early emerging storylines going into fall camp.
Absolutely. I think it's something we've talked about a lot between you and I here on the podcast, but just to reiterate things, I mean, as you said, a big storyline is just what is Jay Johnson's offense going to look like compared to what Matt Limegrover's did for the past 5 years. From what I'm drawing from the people I talk to, I think you're going to see a lot more aggressive offense, one that is not going to sit back in risk averse mode like Jerry Kill and Matt Limegrover like to do. Kent State comes up and as an example from last season, obviously the 10-7 win where Minnesota just ran the ball the entire second half, didn't trust their junior quarterback at all, and just said, if you guys are going to beat us, you got to do it in going against our defense. But I just think Tracy is going to have a lot more trust in what Jay Johnson wants to do. I mean, you even saw it in the latter half when Tracy did take over, where he was willing to take some risks, willing to go for it on fourth and short, or, you know, at the goal line, fourth and short. I mean, he trusts in his football team, and I think you're going to see a little bit more aggressive play calling from that aspect. And we also have to figure out how much is going to change. As I've talked about, I think 30 to 40% is going to change, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if what they're saying is what actually is being put into action. You know, one of the things that I was taught growing up was, I hear what you say, but I trust what you do. And obviously the Gopher coaches are talking about putting their best playmakers on the field, putting them in space and putting them in the best opportunities to have success. And while that sounds all good in theory, until they start doing it, until we start seeing it in the non-conference, we won't exactly know. And then obviously you have the addition of Bart Miller with the firing of Matt Limegrover, and how much of what Bart Miller is trying to do is going to be, you know, seen in action, I should say, I guess, on the offensive line. He's trying to really instill a very physical mentality and mental toughness among this offensive line group that has really underachieved, I think, for the last few years for the amount of talent they have there. And it's going to be very interesting to see how much Bart Miller can do in 1 year. Because I think in the long term, I think Bart Miller is one of the up-and-coming offensive line coaches in the country, and I think he'll be able to prove that. But how much of that is he going to be able to instill in his guys in only 6 to 8 months? I don't know. And so it's going to be very intriguing to see what this offensive line looks like, what the offensive play calling looks like, how they're going to be able to put guys in space. But as you said, just the entire Gopher offense is going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, let's actually stick with the offense and chat a little bit about just position battles that we expect. I think for the most part, you'd agree with me that the whole offensive line is up for grabs, right? I mean, outside of maybe a Vincent Calhoun and a Tyler Moore and maybe a Jonah Persig, other positions are totally up for grabs, right?
I'd agree with that. I would say Tyler Moore at center is pretty set in stone because Minnesota really doesn't have another center on the roster that's ready right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, and he's got game experience too.
Absolutely does, and I think Jonah Persig at right tackle is pretty set in stone as well. As that's a place where I think Jonah feels most comfortable. But you know, Garrison Wright and Vince Calhoun, Minnesota's two junior college offensive linemen, are going to be starting. It's just a matter of where are they going to be starting.
Sure.
I think Vincent Calhoun at right guard makes a lot of sense. But as far as where is Garrison Wright going to play, I could see him at left guard or at left tackle. Right now he's your starting left tackle. But say Donald Green comes into fall camp next week and he shows that he's farther along in terms of development than what they thought, I think then you slide Garrison Wright into left guard. And between him and Connor Mays, you say, here we go, fellas. I mean, one is an Army All-American. The other one's a pretty good junior college kid. And mano y mano. I mean, you're battling for one spot. And it's going to be an interesting thing to watch. Chad Fanning, he played pretty well in the spring. And so, as you said, there's just a lot of unknowns about what Bart Miller is going to try to do. As I said, center, I think, is pretty locked down. Right tackle, pretty locked down. I think, for the most part, Vincent Calhoun at right guard makes a lot of sense. But the left side of the offensive line, as it stands right now, Garrison would be starting at left tackle and Connor Mays at left guard. But I don't think that's set in stone by anything of the imagination. Maybe one of these redshirt freshman kids that they signed in 2015 proves that he's ready to go. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, that's one of the main position battles I'll be watching here come Saturday and going through fall camp, is what does the left side of the offensive line look like as things start to shake out? And I think your early indication of what that's going to look like is going to come at that scrimmage next Saturday.
The other thing that would be really interesting if people get the opportunity to go to practice is just try to see, you know, some of these younger guys and who potentially could provide some depth going into the season. Because right now, like you said, you can rattle off maybe what's a starting five, but you're not really certain, you know, after that. And you need, as last season showed, you need depth to get through a full Big Ten slate.
Absolutely, and that's the issue with the offensive line, is there's very little proven depth. I can talk to you about Nick Conley, the offensive tackle from Red Wing, Quinn Osland, fairly highly regarded offensive lineman from that 2015 class, Bronson Dovich, our local kid, Ted Stieber. I mean, there's a bunch of younger guys there, but they haven't proven anything yet. And if you're looking to see how does this offensive line hold up if they do have a couple of key injuries, well then, I can tell you a story where that's not going to look tremendously good, especially if you're trying to protect Mitch, who's finally healthy for the first time in a few years, and trying to open some holes for a couple of pretty damn good sophomore running backs. But again, as you said, if you want to come to practice and get a look at what these redshirt freshmen and redshirt sophomores and true freshmen look like on the offensive line, more power to you. The bodies are there. They just have to step up.
All right, let's stick with some position battles before we get into, you know, chatting more about the offense. So let's talk about a wide receiver. That's got to be a ginormous question mark. You know, outside of Wolitarski, there's not a lot of proven depth coming back. You could say Rashad Still and Eric Carter, but you know, you lose a guy like KJ May, and you got to replace that kind of production. Who are the guys that are going to be vying for playing time at wide receiver?
From talking with a guy today about this wide receiver position, he agreed with me that Drew Wolitarski is really the only thing they have proven there. And Eric Carter showed some things last year. Rashad Still showed some things last year. But while they're the starters right now, I don't think their positions are set in stone by any means. I think Melvin Holland has a pretty good chance to break out if he can just continue to work on being consistent with his hands. You have Isaiah Gentry, who's got all the athletic ability in the world. He just has to work on staying healthy. You have Hunter Register, a big target from Louisiana, who he and Rashad Still looked pretty dang good in fall camp as true freshmen last year. And obviously fans know how Rashad Still did contributing early on. Does Hunter Register take a step forward? You have a couple of walk-on kids like Brian Smith, Adam Mayer that have drawn some praise. Brian Smith was a guy in fall camp last year that was running with the twos, and I thought he may see some time, but eventually that didn't pan out, so maybe this is Brian Smith's year. Then you look at the true freshmen, two guys that are transitioning from playing high school quarterback to wide receiver in college. I don't know how smoothly that transition will go, but Phillip Howard and Tyler Johnson have a lot of athletic talent as well. So, but the issue is, Luke, as I'm listing off all these guys' names, I mean, each one of them has a giant question mark next to their name.
Yeah.
And this, in this source I spoke with, who is working very closely with the staff today, you know, he's as concerned about it as I am. He's just, he doesn't know what's going to step up. He doesn't know how this is going to play out. And that's why fall camp is so critical, seeing who's up to the challenge, who's not quite ready. But Leidner's going to need some targets to throw the ball to. And as he's at the Big Ten Media Days, Mitch was talking up Melvin Holland some. He was talking up Eric Carter some. My guy that I think that would make the most sense to break out from that group I just mentioned would be Melvin Holland, just because he has the least amount of obstacles in his way to playing time. Mm-hmm. If he can just figure out his hands and just being consistent with his catches, and that's just, I think that's mental. I mean, it's something he didn't show really at all during high school, and he's just battled some drop issues since he's gotten here. But if he can just put that behind him, he runs good routes. If he can just prove that he can catch a ball outside of his catch radius from time to time, he's someone I think that can be a major contributor. So, but there's a lot of unproven things there, and that's why fall camp is going to be very, very important for the wide receivers.
Right. Like you said, you know, Mitch needs guys to throw to, and quite frankly, he's gotta be one of the bigger storylines going into this fall camp. You know, being a senior, finally, you know, they have some proven stability at quarterback. He's had some up and downs, but, you know, there's some high expectations for him going into the season. Finally, he's healthy, right? That's something that I don't think we've seen the last two seasons as he was the starter. But, you know, he battled three injuries. He's definitely a gamer. He's definitely a leader. There's no question about that. People are now have the expectation that he can make the next step, right? That he can play better, be more consistent, and lead this team, you know, hopefully to higher heights than they've had in previous years.
There's no doubt in my mind, Luke, that the season is hinging on the right shoulder of Mitch Leidner. And, you know, I was doing some research today, and Mitch Leidner is likely going to finish top three in Gopher quarterback history in the following statistics: passing yards, passing completions, passing attempts, completion percentage, and likely passing touchdowns as well. That's someone that has seen a lot of ridicule thrown his way. You know, obviously some at times is deserving, but he goes from being a glorified fullback his freshman year to someone who has to go through and take some lumps as a sophomore. And I think he made some progressions during his junior season last year. But as we've talked about, he was battling that foot ligament issue since the 2014 season. He played through it all last season. He's down 20 pounds. He's finally healthy for the first time since probably his freshman year. It's just going to be exciting to see what Mitch can do, knowing that he's the guy. And Gopher fans should be finally excited, as this is the year in terms of you have a fourth-year senior starting quarterback. Literally, it can't get any better in terms of game experience with Mitch Leidner. I think he's probably seen about every defense they're going to throw at him. He's been in every kind of game type situation, from the going to in Madison in 2014, where he didn't play particularly well at all in Madison, where the Gophers had a shot to get to the Big Ten championship game, to everything he went through last year in just terms of adversity with Jerry Kill, his biggest supporter, retiring midseason. And then he goes on to play well for the latter half this season against some pretty good competition. But as you said, just following how Mitch Leidner's senior year goes, from, you know, Todd McShay saying he's going to be a first-round draft pick.
Right.
I don't know who that helps, considering that just builds the hype for Mitch. And, you know, is Mitch Leidner an NFL quarterback? Probably, but we'll find out this season if he continues to take a step forward. But he's going to need help. He's going to need Shannon Brooks and Ronnie Smith to help him out on the ground. He's going to need Brandon Langen and Drew Wilitarski to help their production from last season, and he's going to need some help from the unproven guys.
Mm-hmm.
As we talked about, Eric Carter, Rashad Still, Melvin Holland, Isaiah Gentry, you know, different guys. Somebody needs to help him so they can create separation so Mitch doesn't have to sit in the pocket quite long enough as his offensive line. But the new offensive line coach continues to work through some things and just establish some continuity, which is also critical to that offensive line position. But absolutely, this is the year of Mitch Leidner. It's the year that fans can potentially see one of the best Gopher quarterbacks they've seen in quite some time here and just see how he continues to get better and progress through his senior season.
All right, I think we can switch over to the defensive side, talk some storylines there. You know, I think it goes a little bit overlooked that they really are making a change, you know, at the helm of the defense. I know Clays is the head coach. He's been the mastermind of this pretty successful defense over the Jerry Kill tenure, right? But they are making a switch, and it's going to be Jay Sovell's show, right? I think there's been some talk of anticipated changes and how they're going to run their scheme, you know, and in some ways to me, it seems a little bit silly with the success they've had, but in the same respect, it also seems to make sense given it'll fit their players and the talent that they have maybe a little bit better. So I think one of these storylines could be the transition to possibly incorporating a 3-4 or some hybrid of that type of scheme. But also another storyline, which maybe is getting overlooked, is just Jay Sovell being the defensive coordinator and running the show.
As we talked about, Luke, I think it's so important to fit the scheme to the players instead of the players to the scheme. And I'm pretty sure I said that right, didn't I?
I think so. Yeah, I think everybody should understand that, you know, the scheme fits the players' abilities.
Absolutely, and that's why you've heard so much, or however you want to phrase it. I mean, there's been talk of 3-4 in this offseason. And when you look at what the personnel that Minnesota has, playing a 3-4 is so much more conducive to what his defensive strengths are going to be in 2016. I know one of the position battles we're going to be talking about here is who's starting in the 4-3 alongside Galen Elmore. And I don't know. And that's one of the big things we're going to have to be talking about is it Hank Epke after he had a very – just not a very productive junior season, didn't do a whole lot with the amount of snaps he got, and then there's a lot of unproven talent after him. But if you really only have one Big Ten quality proven defensive end in Galen Elmore, and you have 4, 5, 6 defensive tackles that can be playing snaps in the Big Ten, then why the heck shouldn't you be trying to research the 3-4 a little bit more, as that would be so much more conducive to what your strengths are when the 4-3 just isn't there with the amount of talent that they have at defensive end. Plus, you look at the amount of talent they have at linebacker this year. It's so deep. I mean, you have Jack Lynn, you have Cody Polk, you have Jonathan Celestine, Julian Huff, Nick Rallis, Jalen Waters, Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin, Blake Cashman. I mean, that's 8. You go 8 deep at linebacker. You need to be finding more ways to get more linebackers on the field instead of defensive ends, and that's why you see the talk of 3-4. That's why you saw the talk of Dave Aranda coming in this spring and talking with Tracy Clays and Jay Sovell about the nuances of the 3-4. The staff knows what they need to do to be successful, and they know that they need to win games in 2016 so they can guarantee their long-term stability here at Minnesota. The staff is very happy with where they are in Minnesota now.
Mm-hmm.
They have the new facilities that are being built. If anybody has not seen what the new renderings of the facilities are going to look like, I encourage you to check out my Twitter. I posted some pictures there of what the latest renderings look like, and they look like something special. So, but as you said, just what is Jay Sovell going to do in his first full year as defensive coordinator? I think he's going to be running a multitude of different defenses. How does Tracy Clays move from full-time defensive coordinator, head coach in his first full season, knowing that he can still have some say in the defense, but that Jay Johnson really is the only mind on the offense now? Sure, Tracy's going to have a couple of decisions there on the offensive side of the ball, but for the most part, it's the Jay Johnson show. So just getting to see what Jay Sovo looks like as a defensive coordinator, obviously a well-earned position for the amount of defensive back talent he's proven and developed here at Minnesota thus far in his tenure. Him transitioning from defensive backs coach to D coordinator / DB coach is just going to be interesting and a fun storyline to follow as this Gopher defense tries to move on with Devondre Campbell seemingly having a great camp for the Atlanta Falcons. I've seen numerous beat writers saying that he's the steal of the camp. He's stealing the show on the defensive side of the ball there. Eric Murray is having a good camp with the Chiefs, and I've seen a couple of things about bringing Bobby Calhoun with the Jaguars as well. So three guys of the NFL, how do they replace them, and how are they going to keep continuing to move forward?
So you brought up defensive end. That's obviously a position battle just because of, you know, there, nothing's proven there. I'd even argue with you that, you say Galen Elmore's maybe, you know, Big Ten ready or a solid Big Ten defensive end. I don't think his production necessarily speaks to it. Maybe physically he's now Big Ten ready, but I don't think right now there's really any defensive end that you can really brag about. They just haven't had the production there. And there is as many question marks to me at defensive end as there are, if not even more, than wide receiver.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And what I mean in terms of Galen is really the only one that looks to be ready. Again, I saw Galen Elmore at one of the July camps, folks. He looks what you thought he was going to be when they signed him in 2014. He is now developed into his body very well. He's all of 6'5", 6'6", 260, 270 pounds. He looks like he's ready to finally contribute into a big way here in Minnesota. But as you said, he's went from playing defensive end his true freshman year, really didn't know what he was doing as he only played tight end really in high school. Then he played some weird tweener defensive tackle, defensive end stuff last year as he was still trying to develop into his body. Now I think he's, as a true junior, I think he's ready. But he hasn't proven that he can do that game in, game out at a Big Ten level, and that's something he's going to have to deal with. But he's the one I feel most confident about at defensive end. But Hank Epke just – I've done a complete 360 for anybody who remembers me talking about Hank Epke last year. I thought he was going to be the breakout defensive end for this team, and I was so off base. And I can see the errors of my ways. It's just Hank doesn't have a lot of defensive, just a lot of pass rushing moves. He can really bend the corner, but it's not like he's going to stem and go inside or use a spin move or just beat you inside. I mean, if he can't turn the corner, he's basically nullified. And that's not going to get it done. I mean, he played in 13 games last season. I think he only had 16 tackles and a couple of sacks. And it's just, I know what you're going to get in Hank Epke. And I just think that you can maybe find some different things. Maybe that's Winston Dilaudy-Boudaire, a redshirt freshman from last season, someone that was one of the work team players of the year, someone who I can tell you his motor is always going. He may not have the ideal defensive end Big Ten measurables like Galen does, but his motor is always going, and he's got a ton of heart, something that he never gives up on a play, and there's something to be said for that. Julian Kafo, I think he's still adjusting to from Canadian high school football to Big Ten level. Obviously, he's got a Big Ten caliber body at defensive end, but I just don't think he has the amount of moves I would be comfortable with. And then you have some redshirt freshmen and freshmen that I just don't think are ready. So how is this going to shake out? I think Winston, if they do play a lot of 4-3, which I don't anticipate, I do think Winston Dilaudy-Boudaire is going to overtake Hank Epke. I just think that Winston can get you a little bit more out of that defensive end spot. I do think Minnesota is going to, on pass rushing situations, is going to bring in linebackers as they did last year to try and get to the passer. Maybe they leave Galen Elmore out there and they only bring in Julian Huff on the edge or Carter Coughlin on the edge or someone. But it's a dicey position, Luke, at defensive end, and that's why I think you're seeing more and more about the 3-4, is it just makes so much more sense to run more linebackers out there than try and deal with what Minnesota has at defensive end right now.
All right, let's talk a little bit about position battles in the secondary. You know, outside of Jalen Myrick at corner, you know, you got something in Keyonte Harden. You know, he played a little bit last year and showed some stuff. You saw a little bit of Antonio Chenault. But otherwise, you know, I'd say outside of Myrick, you don't really have proven commodities. You have a lot of faith in what Jay Sovell's been able to produce. You know, he's got some recruits he's pretty high on, or some guys that have redshirted and are freshmen that he's pretty high on. But I feel like outside of Jalen, who's going to lock down that other starting corner spot?
I've talked with a couple different people around the Gibson-Nagurski complex this week about it. And the true story is, and both of the guys agreed with me, I could tell you a story where there's four or five different starting options at corner, where there's four or five different guys that I could tell you a story, and they're starting at corner game one. And there's four or five different guys I could tell you a story, and they're finding a way to playing time and starting at safety. It's crazy to me just because of the amount of unproven talent that is in the secondary. There's talent there, obviously, as it's Jay Sovell secondary that's put three straight years of defensive backs to the NFL, but it's just going to be very fun to watch who steps up. If I had to tell you, gun to my head right now, who's starting in the first practice alongside Jalen Myrick, I already gave it away there, I'd say it's Ray Buford. I think that Ray has the highest ceiling. I've said that numerous times here on the podcast. I think Ray Buford is the highest ceiling of any Gopher on this team. I think he has the potential to be better than Eric Murray. And obviously he's a long ways from getting to that level, but he has got a lot of physical attributes that make you go, he could be something one day. And if the light bulb goes on for Ray, great, because now you have a 6'2" starting corner that alongside Jalen Myrick is going to do some damage. He's going to take some lumps as he continues to learn how to be a Big Ten cornerback, but he's going to be one that I think is going to be special down the line. So if it's not Ray, well, how about Keyonte Harden, a true sophomore who played some last year as a true freshman? The thing with Keyonte is he missed some time in the spring, so he didn't get a chance to develop as much as some on the coaching staff may have liked.
You're right.
But he's going to have his chance to make a mark this fall. Antonio Chenault is one of the guys that really did take a pretty big step forward from talking with somebody around the building. He thought that Antonio Chenault may have had the best last eight practices of the spring of any of the defensive backs in terms of just taking steps forward in terms of where he's going, where he should be, where he's going to be tackling, making plays on the ball. He doesn't exactly have the ideal measurables that you're looking for. He's only 5'9", 170, 180 pounds. But as Brian Body Calhoun showed you, it's not all about that. So maybe Antonio Chenault gets something on it. And then we have to start talking about the true freshman. Again, from talking with somebody this week, 100% chance Coney Durr plays if he's healthy. He is absolutely what they thought he was going to be. He's all of a 5'10" cornerback that plays with a lot of physicality. He plays with a lot of what the kids call in juice. He's just someone that I think is going to make an immediate impact on this team. And I wouldn't be surprised at all come that Saturday scrimmage if he's someone that's getting first-team reps. And then you look at somebody like Antoine Winfield Jr., another guy where it sounds like he's got a very likely scenario of playing as a true freshman. Issue with Antoine Winfield Jr. is the staff doesn't know what he is yet. Is he a corner? Is he a safety? Is he going to be nickel? That's something they have to work out during fall camp, but it sounds like he's made a pretty good impression on the strength and conditioning staff as well as the football staff. And then Keandre Thomas, another true freshman who, if the light really does continue to go on for him, as it sounds like it has been getting stronger and stronger here throughout the summer, he's someone that, again, that's four, five, six different guys we can talk about starting alongside Jalen Myrick. And the truth is, I bet you Jay Sovell has no idea which one of them is going to become Oregon State yet, but that's a good thing. They know that Jalen's going to be the guy on one side, but the other six guys that I just listed off there know there is a story they can tell themselves where they walk in Oregon State, and they're the starting cornerback. So, and that's going to push each and every one of them to try and out-compete, out-perform the rest. But that cornerback spot, Luke, I think is pretty open, and it's one I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on come Saturday.
Yeah, definitely a good thing to have competition, right? That's always that's absolutely a great thing to have. Real quickly, safety. You've got Demaryius Travis coming back, so you have some stability there. He's a guy that was, likely would have been drafted this last season had he not yet gotten hurt. Outside of him, you've got Kunle. They brought in a grad transfer whose name is escaping me now. They don't bring in a grad transfer, to sit on the bench. So he's going to play. And then there's Ace Rogers. Outside of that, what do we got?
As you said, for as much stability in the secondary as there is between Demaryius and Jalen Myrick, there's so much instability at the other positions. You're looking for a new nickel corner. You're looking for a new safety. You're looking for a new cornerback. And, as we listed out a cornerback, I can now tell you another scenario where four or five different safeties walk into immediate playing time. You start with Ace Rogers, who's recovering from knee surgery. From the people I talked to this week, I'd be surprised if Ace Rogers is 100% ready to go in the early stages of fall camp. So don't be surprised if Ace Rogers isn't 100% during the first week. And so I think that's going to limit his chances a bit, as it gives other guys opportunities to step up. As you talked about, Kume Ayende, someone that started six or seven Big Ten games for Minnesota last year as a walk-on. Now he's been awarded a scholarship. How does he react to now being a scholarship player, someone who's played some in the Big Ten? You have Eric Omoko, the graduate transfer you mentioned earlier, previously at Oregon, previously at Houston Baptist. Again, Tracy Clay isn't bringing in a graduate transfer to just provide depth. He's bringing him into play. I think Eric is probably the guy that is the leading candidate to be your nickel corner at this stage, as he's got a lot of experience being that kind of a guy. But it remains to be seen. You have Duke McGee, someone who played in a double-digit tackles against Illinois and Wisconsin, two quality Big Ten teams. But is he going to be able to get in the right position all the time? He sounds like he may have a thing or two to iron out yet. And then another name I think we should probably be talking about is Jacob Huff, someone that, from talking with a couple of people this week, that he also made some strides in the spring, someone who worked his way up into the second string, and he's going to have absolutely every opportunity to try and work in and be that guy alongside Demaryius Travis. I think he's probably – his ceiling would be Antonio Johnson, but I don't know that he's ever going to be as physical as what Antonio was, but I think he's someone that can be dependable, someone that's a sure tackler, and someone that is going to be in the right spot. And there's a lot to be said for that in terms of the safeties trying to line up the different guys in the defense and making sure they're getting the right calls and getting the right position. So Jacob Huff, Kume Ayende, Eric Omoko, Duke McGee, Ace Rogers, that's five guys right there. We haven't even talked about Dior Johnson or Alonzo Creighton.
Right.
Plus maybe Antoine Winfield makes a mark here too. So there's a lot of bodies. There's a lot of safety names to know. And again, I doubt Jay Sovell knows who his starting safety is going to be or his starting nickel at this stage, and that's why fall camp is going to be so crucial. And again, for each one of these safeties, it's not like they have to dread going into fall camp knowing, oh, man, like the corners had to last year. They knew Brian Boddy and they knew Eric Murray were going to be the safety, so maybe they didn't want to push each other as hard per se. Again, I'm not saying that's what happened at all, but now each one of the safeties and each one of the corners can look and say, there is a scenario where I could be the starting guy. And that means I have to bring it day after day after day, bring my lunch pail in and get my hard day's work in. Because if I do that consistently and I perform how the way I expect to perform, I could be starting. And that, I think that's tremendous. And that, as we've talked about, is going to push them to compete each and every day and make each other better. And that's all you can ask for. But as we talked about, the position battles to watch at wide receiver, offensive line, defensive end, cornerback, and safety. I think for anybody who's wondering, well, Devondre Campbell left, I'm pretty sure Jonathan Celestine has a very firm grip on that role now. I think he's someone that I tabbed him as my breakout player earlier this week on Gopher Illustrated. I think he's someone that he has 60 total tackles through his first two collegiate seasons. I expect that number to double. I think he can be anywhere between 80 total tackles to 100 total tackles as a junior this year. So five different spots for position battles, Luke. Multiple storylines. I'm ready to get going. I'm ready to get to the Tracy Clay's press conference, his opening press conference for fall camp on Thursday morning. Fall camp opens on Friday, and I get to go see what the guys look like for the first time on Saturday. It's always exciting to see what the true freshmen look like. You get your first impressions of them since you saw them on tape, since you saw them potentially on their official visits during the fall. And then what do the guys look like from the spring? You know, have the offensive linemen, what guys have put on 10, 15 pounds? What defensive linemen have put on 10, 15 mm-hmm. pounds? What skill position players have put on a little bit of mass? It's all things that are so key in trying to piece together this puzzle, and each practice provides you a couple more pieces trying to figure out how this everything fits together. So only five more days until we get to get our first look at the team. You know, five open practices in the next week and a half after that, and you get to start to see who's emerging, who is some more work to do, but it's all part of Gopher football. It's all part of the football season, Luke, and it's just something I'm excited to be talking about again.
Yeah, it should be fun. I got one more talking point for the defense. I think this is overlooked a little bit. You know, they've been strong defensively the last couple of years, and very much so in the passing game. But I think especially what got overlooked last year, they really struggled stopping the run last season.
Yes. Yep.
They gave up 166 yards per game, 23 rushing touchdowns, 4.1 yards per carry. You know, this is an area they really have to improve this season. And you know, I get it that they've lost a lot in their secondary, and I get it that, you know, they feel like the strength is linebacker, but those are some pretty damning statistics. You know, if you're trying to be, you know, if your calling card is, you know, you're a run first team and you're getting outrushed by your opponent, you know, by 20 plus yards a game. I think that's an area they really have to improve if they're going to take the next step.
I think it starts up front. Obviously, fans know about the multitude of injuries Minnesota dealt with on
Correct.
The defensive line.
Yep.
Especially towards the latter half of the season, where it seemed like that rushing total continued to rise and rise and rise for each Gopher opponent.
Right.
I think now that you look at what they have at defensive tackle, Stephen Richardson, Gary Moore, Merrick Jackson, Andrew Stelter, Shuby Timms, and Scott Ufkay. I mean, that's six Big Ten defensive tackles where, for the most part, you're going to feel pretty comfortable. I'd say I feel pretty comfortable with five of those, and then whatever you can get from Shuby Timms is going to be an added bonus. And then you look at if the defensive line can control their gaps and not get pushed out of the way, then that allows the linebackers to flow through and get their run fit, plus the safety comes down in the box, gets his run fit as well. And if this defensive line is able to stay healthy and able to control their gaps in the trenches, I think you're going to see this run defense go from what I believe was about 106 in the country last season out of 128 teams to, if they can be in the 50s or even better than that, I think that's a pretty remarkable improvement. But I think, again, there's going to be some lumps as Minnesota potentially experiments with some things, going from 4-3 to 4-2-5 to 2-4-5 to 3-4. You know, Jay Sano is going to throw a bunch of different looks out there. And as they continue to try to adjust to their different reads that in each one of these different formations, per se, I think you may see a couple of early big runs, potentially in the first half of the season. But as each one of these guys gets more comfortable in the scheme, I think towards the latter half, you're going to see this run defense hopefully start to stiffen up a bit and start to figure out, hey, if we can really limit the run, we can force some passing situations to where our defensive back can finally start to have a little bit of a field day, which is what you want. So, as you said, though, I mean, that all sounds good in theory, but these defensive tackles have to stay healthy, and these linebackers and defensive backs have to continue to do their part in the run fit. But if this defensive line can really control their gaps, I think flowing back from there, you can start to see the run fit get better and better.
All right, so I think that'll wrap this episode up. Yeah, it's good to have football back here fairly soon, and it should be fun to follow, and there's going to be a lot to talk about. Hopefully, the Gophers can make that next step and compete for a Big Ten West championship. It should be a good thing to watch.
Absolutely, and the best part about this is, Luke, this time next week when we're going to be recording on this Tuesday night, I'll have two practices under my belt, and I'll be able to share some things of what I'm learning here early on. Who's standing out? Who looks bigger? Who looks faster? How all of these pieces are just starting to come together into what this giant Gopher football puzzle is. And, we'll go deeper from there, and then eventually as we start to roll through August here, Luke and I will get to our season predictions and how we think this Gopher football season can be laid out. I'm sure we'll talk about a bunch of different scenarios in terms of your ideal scenario, your what we're actually expecting scenario, what the worst case is. So as Luke said, it's just fun to be talking Gopher football again, and we'll be talking here weekly with each and every one of you guys as the season continues to get closer and closer.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.